It is Monday, June 20th. Welcome to Regionally Speaking. I'm Tom Maloney. Democrats and Republicans have selected their statewide candidates over the weekend. What does that mean for your fall balance? We'll be talking with Andy Downs at the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics from Indiana University Purdue University Fort Wayne. We'll also get the second installment of our Meet the Mayor conversation with the newly selected Mayor Pete. That's Mayor Pete Land as he replaces outgoing Crown Point Mayor David Uran. And wrapping up today's show, we'll be talking with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, who recently made a trek to Northwest Indiana to find out just what Latino businesses are doing here in the region. All of that and more, but first, the news. Welcome to Regionally Speaking. On this Monday, the official federal holiday for Juneteenth, I'm Tom Maloney. And if you want to get caught up on the history of Juneteenth and what Juneteenth means for the region, you can check out our podcast for Regionally Speaking as we had that discussion last week. That's available online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. But now we're looking ahead to the fall. Yes, we're looking at 90 to 100 degree days over the next couple of weeks. And not a lot of people are thinking about November ballots, but some people are. And one of those individuals is Andy Downs with the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Indiana University, Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Not out of Indianapolis, but out of Fort Wayne. I think the cost of living is a little cheaper up in Fort Wayne. Right, Andy?
Well, actually, what I have to say is it's no longer IPFW. There's now an IU Fort Wayne and a Purdue Fort Wayne.
Okay, so which one are you in?
Fort Wayne.
You're at Purdue Fort Wayne. Okay, so let me try this over again. We're joined now by Andy Downs, the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Did I get it right?
Hello. That is correct.
Good deal. Good thing we're live. Andy, welcome to Regionally Speaking. And a lot of big political news over the weekend as both Democrats and Republicans have filled out their statewide ballots for contenders among races, including the state treasurer, state auditor, as well as secretary of state. Now, let's go ahead and chat about that and what that means for Hoosiers coming up this fall. I think the big news over the weekend, depending on what side of the line you're on, is the ouster of Secretary of State Holly Sullivan, who has lost a potential re-election bid, though she was appointed previously, to Diego Morales, who is a 2020 election denier, calling the election a scam. What kind of precedent does this set for Indiana when it comes to voting this fall?
Well, I think we need to take a look at how these candidates are actually nominated. And for a lot of people, they forget that these are done at a convention. Every 2 years, the state parties hold conventions. And at the convention, that's where state offices like Secretary of State, State Treasurer, Auditor, Attorney General, those sorts of things are nominated. This year, obviously, it was Secretary of State, Auditor, and Treasurer that they were dealing with. But you're right, the big deal is the Secretary of State. Holly Sullivan had not been through this nominating process before. And when you're talking about a convention, you're talking about, 1,000, maybe 1,800 people who are going to make the decision about who the nominee is going to be. Diego Morales was really good about going around the state to all the Lincoln Day dinners and meeting people and literally talking directly to voters. When you're only talking about, 1,500 voters, plus or minus a few hundred, you can do that. And he was able to convince people he had a good position on issues, one of them being that the 2020 election maybe needs to be questioned a little bit and that security needs to be enhanced as far as elections in Indiana are concerned. Keep in mind, everybody, that Holly Sullivan was named to the position of Secretary of State in 2021, so she was not a long-time incumbent in the position. She had not received this nomination before, and for a lot of people, she was viewed as an establishment individual. There are some reporting that at the convention, she was booed or jeered a little bit when she was being introduced or when she was talking, and Morales was not. So Morales has said 2020 was not what it should have been. He's also said he wants to cut election early voting period for elections in half. He says this will not only help with security, but help with cost issues. So he was delivering a message that resonates well with the people who are hardcore members of the party who are willing to show up at a convention. And he did the important thing, which is to do the groundwork in advance of the convention itself.
So I have to wonder, he talks about the hardcore individuals of the group. Indiana is a Republican-controlled state. We have a supermajority with a Republican governor, Republican state legislature as well. And locally, a lot of Republicans in charge of local and county offices, city offices across the state. What is the survey of the land when it comes to the Hoosier state? Do a lot of Hoosiers, do many Hoosiers, do any Hoosiers believe in the big lie as then President Trump was pushing that the 2020 election was a quote unquote scam, as Morales has called it?
We do know there are people in the state who think that the election was fraudulent. Although, let's keep in mind, for a lot of individuals, they will also then say that the elections held in their county or even throughout the state of Indiana were just fine. So this is something that is location-specific, and because in many states, if not virtually all states, elections are administered on a local level, you can have people say, well, my election was fine, but that other election mm-hmm. was run unfairly. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of the same approach that people have to members of Congress, where they will say, my member of Congress is okay, it's the rest of them who are terrible. This is what we can see happening with election administration. And so there are not a lot of calls for massive changes to what Indiana does. If people will remember, there was broad-based support for the changes made in 2020 in Indiana, broad-based and bipartisan, by the way. But Indiana, come the fall, moved away from enhanced mail-in ballots and some other things that some other states embraced more fully than Indiana did. And so it's possible for people to say, we're doing okay in Indiana, but we need to be vigilant because we know the enemies are at the gate, so to speak.
Yeah, I know up here in Northwest Indiana, we had several polling locations consolidated / closed and moved to different locations, which really became a unique challenge. And I should note for listeners that both Andy and I are on the Indiana Debate Commission board for the whole state. And I do have a pretty close relationship with the League of Women Voters of both the Calumet area, which covers Lake County, and the Porter County League of Women Voters as well. And in conversations with them, that they were decrying the closing of those polling locations. So I guess I find it, I don't want to say interesting or fascinating, but it leaves me perplexed in terms of the rhetoric that it has been espoused when it comes to election integrity and safety, when it feels like, more often than not, they're talking about either Democratic locations of voting and or city locations for voting, which are predominantly minority-based, black-based, Hispanic-based voters. I don't know. I get maybe am I reading between the lines there that I feel like sometimes it feels like race comes into play, especially when it comes to location, where so many locations, so many counties across Indiana are predominantly white, and those voting locations are okay. But it's those other voting locations, especially in places up here in Northwest Indiana, down in Indianapolis and maybe up in South Bend and maybe some locations over by you in Fort Wayne, Andy.
Well, I think there are a number of things to keep in mind here. But one of them is, let's go back to when voter ID laws were put in place in Indiana. Mm-hmm. There was virtually no evidence of fraud in Indiana, yet there were accusations of fraud. And that was part of what drove the adoption of what at the time were some of the most restrictive voter identification laws in the country. Indiana kind of led the rest of the country in adopting that photo ID standard. It was Indiana that had a case go all the way up to the Supreme Court. And so people are sort of willing to hear, a story of fraud, and if no one can prove the fraud, they do one of two things. They either say, well, prove there wasn't fraud, and as we all know, you can't prove a negative, or they say, this is about securing things so that we don't have fraud. When those two arguments are made, well, it's a little hard to argue against the idea of having, you know, free and fair and secure elections. So the second argument's a little difficult to challenge. And the first one can't be proven because you can't prove a negative. The other thing for people to keep in mind is that when there are close elections, there's quite often a call for a recount. And a recount is something I think people can understand. Let's just count everything up again, make sure that the numbers add up. But for many recounts, there is also a challenge to the administration of the election. In other words, something was flawed in the administration, machines broke down, precinct workers did the wrong thing, something happened. And those accusations basically call into question the integrity and the security of the election, therefore feeding into people's minds this belief that there are flaws in the election system. When you look, though, those challenges are usually based on party, and so you have an awful lot of people who will say, I'm challenging the result, you know, I'm a Republican, I'm challenging what the Democrats did, or I'm a Democrat, I'm challenging what the Republicans did. Because geography plays such a role in concentration of voters, it's easy to start finding those other characteristics also at least being correlated, if not a primary cause. So when you say this could be an accusation that is a racially based accusation, you certainly could also say it's an accusation that seems to be geographically based, whether that's urban versus rural. You could say it's about educational attainment. You could say it's about a number of things.
There's a lot of ways to sort of split that hair, so to speak. We are talking with Andy Downs at the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, here on Regionally Speaking. Andy, of course, talking about Diego Morales, who has been selected by the Republicans to go ahead and replace Holly Sullivan. On the flip side of the coin, the Democrats have put up a vastly different slate of candidates for the fall, including Treasurer Jessica McClellan, Auditor Zanai Brooks, if I'm saying that correctly, Secretary of State Destiny Wells, and, of course, U.S. Senator Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr., obviously out here in Northwest Indiana. What can we learn from the Democratic Party at a statewide level based on the candidates that they have selected? I should note that includes Jessica McClellan, who's if she were to become elected, she would be the first openly LGBTQ plus statewide office holder in Indiana's history. A pretty stark opposition, I think, from what the Republicans are putting up.
Well, and Zanai is a black woman. Destiny is not what a lot of people would normally assume, or Wells is not what people would assume to be a Democrat. This is a person who served in the military, went on to law school, has been involved in local and state government. So this is an interesting slate of candidates on the part of the Democrats. Immediately after Morales was nominated, Wells and the Democratic Party all said, yippee-skippy, this is the best thing we could hope for. This guy, you know, was almost terminated from the Secretary of State's office. He is an election denier. And I think at that moment, a lot of people said that's the race to put the attention on, in part because it's also important when it comes to the legislature. If for some reason there's a tie in the legislature, control of the legislature goes to the party that wins either the governor's race or the Secretary of State's race. Obviously, that's a long shot for Democrats, but it's still something that they think about. However, when you look at the state treasurer race and the state auditor race, what you see are candidates who are really quite nicely qualified, quite frankly, as both D's and R's. You have people who've been elected to local office in many instances. You have people who have the right sort of work experience. In the case of auditor, both Klutz and Brooks are CPAs. This is an interesting collection of candidates, and in some respects, quality candidates, people who've run for office before successfully and who can speak authoritatively about the office they're seeking. And so I think the voters are going to benefit from that. And I think one of the other things the voters will benefit from is that the Libertarians have somebody who is running for Senate, they have somebody running for Secretary of State, and they have somebody running for Auditor as well. And so that sort of brings variety and a more interesting and nuanced debate when we hear from folks.
Andy, that's actually, it's not something we had talked about previously via emails we were getting set up for today's conversation, but in the back of my head, I always wonder, you know, what kind of an impact do the Libertarian candidates have when it comes, or the Green Party candidates, but it seems like the Libertarians have a stronger presence here in the state of Indiana, you know, more at large. What kind of an impact do the third party candidates have when it comes to elections in the fall? We always seem to think somebody might cause a hiccup or a disturbance in the force, but it feels like it rarely happens here in the Hoosier State.
It rarely does, and that's in part because the races usually aren't that close. If the races were closer, then when somebody pulls, you know, 3% or 5% of the vote, that would matter. For example, the Libertarian State Auditor candidate, John Schick, he was the candidate in 14 and in 18 and got about 4.5% of the vote in 14 and about 3-4% in 18. So that's not a huge draw, but a lot of people are just going to go back to 2020 and say, wait a minute, what about Rainwater and his success in the governor's race? And I think most folks would agree that was, in some respects, a result of dissatisfaction with Eric Holcomb. So there's evidence that Libertarian candidates can pull votes, and they are likely pulling them from the conservative party, the Republican Party. But if the Democrats do not have quality candidates and the resources to back up those candidates, that little bit of pull is not going to make a whole lot of difference. And I'm now going to go back to what you brought up, and that's the fact that it's a somewhat diverse group of candidates for the Democrats, as well as well-qualified candidates. This could be a time when the Democrats are able to raise a fair bit of money and have a bit of excitement behind their candidates. So maybe we'd be looking at something that will be exciting. If somebody wants to start thinking about handicapping the races, in addition to the Secretary of State not having the incumbent Holly Sullivan in it, the incumbent Kelly Mitchell is also not going to be running because she's term limited out, so the treasurer's office has no incumbent. And I think for some people what they would say is if the Republicans were looking for an office that is sort of like theirs to hold on to and ignoring all the other sorts of things that we talk about quite often, they might say, well, that's state auditor because Tara Klutz is the incumbent auditor. Incumbents have a tendency to win. Mm-hmm. This could actually end up being a pretty darn interesting election.
Which I think if you had said that to Democrats even in 2020 and 2018, 2016, and all of those wonderful off-year elections as well, they'd probably raise an eyebrow at you considering what's happened for them at the statewide races over the last several years. And before we get into one of those local races here for U.S. Congress, we do have a statewide race for U.S. Senate as Senator Todd Young faces off, the incumbent Todd Young faces off against Hammond Mayor and now Democratic nominee Tom McDermott Jr. Andy, does Mayor McDermott have any weight to push or pull around the state of Indiana when it comes to politics?
The name does. I mean, his is a name that has come up for a long time when Democrats have been talking about the need for statewide candidates, whether that's a governor candidate or, in this case, a Senate candidate. So his name has been floated for a long time. I think it's a name that's recognized within the inner circle of Democrats throughout the state, maybe not so much with rank-and-file voters, but certainly in the inner circle. Coming from, you know, a Democratic stronghold part of the state is good, but at the same time, as I think the listeners know pretty darn well, there are an awful lot of people who look at northwestern Indiana and they say, well, that's that part of Illinois that for some reason is located inside Indiana, mm-hmm. and we don't like them so much. The same way a lot of people say similar things about Indianapolis when they're not in Indianapolis itself. So he has a couple of good things going for him. But the bigger challenge here is probably the fact that Todd Young is an incumbent. He's somebody who won races for the U.S. House three times, I think it was, and has managed to not only have a conservative voting record, but been out in the public and had conversations with people about issues Democrats care about, whether that's housing or veterans affairs or those sorts of things, where, you know, Democrats even walk away from those meetings saying, well, I may not agree with him on X, Y, and Z, but I agree with him on A and B. And the fact that he came out and talked to me was worthwhile, was something to consider. So he is a really strong incumbent, in part because ideologically he lines up with a big chunk of the voters here, but also because he hasn't run away from Democrats, and he's talked about issues Democrats care about.
We're talking with Andy Downs, the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University Fort Wayne, here on Regionally Speaking, and taking a look at a race a little closer to home here in Northwest Indiana is the race for U.S. Congress District 1, in which the incumbent, Frank Mervan, faces a challenger in the form of Jennifer Ruth Green. Green is a currently enrolled member of the United States Air Force, as well as being a black woman, which is a pretty unique thing when it comes to bigger politics here in Indiana, especially on the GOP ticket. Republicans look at this District 1 seat as a possible opportunity to steal a seat when it comes to statewide politics, when it comes to the Indiana congressional districts. Is there any hope for the GOP to slide one out from underneath the table on the Democrats here, or is this really Frank Mervan's race to lose?
There are a couple of factors to consider here. First of all, when it was Pete Vasikoski in 2018, he managed to win about 65% of the vote. When Mervan won in 2020, it was only 57% of the vote. This is a midterm election, which is different, but there also were a few Republican precincts added into the district, which makes it, you know, a little more friendly to Republicans. I think for a lot of Republicans on the national level, they're realizing that just the normal surge and decline of control of seats within each of the chambers suggests that Republicans are going to have a good year this year. And whenever you're around that 55, 56, 57% win, suddenly the other party realizes that with the right candidate and the right circumstances, they maybe can pull a victory out here. As a lot of people will recall, Green raised an awful lot of money for the primary, beat a pretty well-established, what some people would consider to be establishment member of the Republican Party, and did so by you know, saying things that a lot of Trump fans would agree with. The president did quite well, the former president did quite well in the state. And so I think this is why we're seeing Republicans at the national level actually move this race into one of those categories that gets a little more visibility, a little more support. And of course, what they'll wonder is, in a month or so, did anything move? Did the needle move a little bit to Green, or did it stay with Mervan? And if it moved at all, then you can expect additional resources to come in. And then throw on top of all of that the fact that when you look at how Democratic candidates have performed, whether that is someone like a John Gregg or a Joe Donnelly, or whether that's the race down in the southeastern part of the state where Shelley Yoder, a really good candidate, did not do particularly well, or Courtney Tritch did not do particularly well over here, suddenly some outside money for Democrats might be a little slow to come in because they believe that the state has moved very much in the direction of the Republican Party. If all of that comes into play in the way that I mentioned, then, yeah, that's a seat that theoretically could flip. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a seat Democrats should hold on to, but you get all the circumstances, you get the tide moving in the right direction, and suddenly Republicans could manage to pick up a seat.
There is always that, but Andy Downs, Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, joining us here on Regionally Speaking. Andy, we have to leave it there, unfortunately, but no doubt a lot of stuff to talk about still to come this summer and into the early part of the fall. We look forward to future political pontificating with you here on Regionally Speaking, and I'll see you on the next Zoom meeting for the Indiana Debate Commission, whatever that is.
Sounds good, Tom. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Andy. You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Regionally Speaking, and joining us now is the newest mayor in Northwest Indiana, Crown Point Mayor Pete Land. Pete, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you for the invitation.
You are the former chief of police for the city of Crown Point, 17 years as the chief, and a long history of law enforcement background here in Crown Point and Lake County. Mayor Pete, can you talk with us about your background in terms of your professional background, your educational background, so residents of Crown Point can kind of get to know their new mayor?
Sure. So, yeah, I was a police officer at Crown Point Police Department for 34 years in total. And you're correct, I was 17 years as the chief of police. I was actually chief under three different mayors. The first was under Mayor Mitros, the first part of Mayor Klein's administration, and all 14 years under Mayor Uran's administration. Lifelong Crown Point resident, went to high school here, graduated from Valparaiso University, and went right to work at the police department right out of graduation from VU, and been here ever since. And it's my hometown. I love Crown Point, all it has to offer. And I thought, what better way for me to continue my public service transitioning out of the police department than to try and serve as mayor.
So I want to ask, why leave public service? Why leave your desk job as a chief of police for 17 years in order to jump into a mayoralship?
Well, having been there for 34 years, I was kind of looking to maybe transition out into, I love working, transition out in something else, whether it was in the law enforcement field or not. But I knew I wanted to, even if I did that, stay in Crown Point. Like I said, it's my hometown, and I just love living here. So, you know, when the mayor announced his departure, that initially wasn't on my mindset, was, you know, I'm going to go right after this mayor's position. But through some discussions with Mayor Uran and a lot of self-reflection and thought, the more I thought about it, the more I became excited and trying to pursue this. So it was a good decision. I'm glad I made it, and I'm feel very humbled that I was selected to serve as mayor.
And you were selected over Dawn Stokes. 13-8 was the margin. It's 21 out of the 22 precincts in Crown Point voted for you. Mayor Pete, did you have any elected experience prior to this position?
No. So this, I've never held elected office, but kind of when you're serving as a police chief, you kind of got one foot in the political world and one not. Obviously, my direct boss was the mayor, but you're always answerable and accountable to the city council members, in our case, the Board of Public Works, the various council commissions and committees. So I'm used to dealing with that side of things. So I wasn't totally naive to Crown Point politics, but I thought it would be a good transition. And I have a lot to learn, but I know the people here, and they've all been incredibly supportive.
So I know one of those things that you're going to be learning about, I can only assume that the Crown Point Police Department didn't have this kind of a budget, but the city operates a $35 million annual budget. What kind of a learning curve do you expect in terms of learning how to become mayor?
Well, you know, Mayor Uran made a lot of good, smart decisions over his 14 years. And what I always say is one of the best decisions he ever made was assembling his leadership team, which are all in place now, and we're all working together as my leadership team. So I come in, yes, I have a lot to learn. I know the police department inside and out, but the things I need to learn, I have a great leadership team that has been doing this for, you know, almost all of Mayor Uran's term, or a large portion of it. So I rely on that leadership team to bring me up to speed on things that I need to know. And basically just keep doing their job and serving their roles, and, you know, let's get this team and train moving forward.
So let's talk about your leadership style. You know, some people view mayoralships as sort of a city manager or a city planner. Other people prefer to get down and dirty with it. What was your background like as chief of police and as an officer as well through your personal history? How will that sort of dictate your management style in terms of being mayor?
Well, as far as the police department, I did the same thing. I was very fortunate. We had a good leadership team that was in place almost my whole tenure, all 14 years. Made a few changes here and there, but basically, you know, just like the chief of police, the mayor, is I'm the leader of the team, and it's my job and responsibility to assemble a good team and put your own stamp on things as things develop, but and just basically manage the team. There's times that, you know, you make the final call, but after you're receiving input from your leadership team, and that's just part of the responsibility, whether it's police chief or mayor. So my management style is I like to listen. I like input. And, you know, the more you talk and provide me input, the better it is. So I'm definitely not a micromanager by any means, especially, like I said, with this kind of experienced leadership team in place. So. That's pretty much how I manage the police department, and that's how I intend to manage the mayor's office.
So talking about some of the things that that Mayor Uran has sort of left for you includes a lot of growth for the city of Crown Point. Anytime you're driving up and down Broadway or, of course, over from 109th over to I-65 as you make your way into and out of Winfield as well. A lot of growth, a lot of new businesses, a lot of housing projects going on. What is your plan with regards to growth and with traffic as well as things continue to boom in Crown Point?
Well, you're right, yeah, with respect to the growth. You know, I was one of the older timers at the police department, having started 3.5 decades ago. So, you know, Crown Point has definitely changed, but one of the things I always say is when people ask me when I was out in the community is, you know, Chief, what do you think of the growth in Crown Point? And my two-pronged response was always, I love the growth that Crown Point has seen. It's smart, controlled growth. And what I mean by that is the growth, as long as the growth doesn't outpace your city resources and that the ability to provide those resources. And I think the mayor and his team have done a very good job and not allowing that to happen. We definitely kept pace at the police department. We have more officers now than we've had in our city's history. So the growth has been very positive, and the plans that are in the books now and those future plans that are to be set, that's my intention, is let's just do smart, controlled growth. We're in a very good position. You know, we can be selective on what growth we allow in Crown Point. And that's a very good position to be in. So I definitely like how the growth is happening in this city.
Have you given it any thought yet in terms of what you'd look to add to Crown Point or maybe hold back from in terms of growth?
No, I mean, at this point, you know, the growth or the projects that you see, like the 109th Avenue road project, and then there's some developments that are already being planned for that. So we'll look to see how we can facilitate that and then, you know, kind of add what we think may be a good complement to that area. So, you know, we're just working on what kind of what is already on the books or in the near future.
We're talking with the newly minted mayor of Crown Point, Pete Land, who was selected by the Crown Point Democratic Caucus earlier this month, actually, in a 13-8 voting to go ahead and take over for outgoing Mayor Dave Uran, who has been selected as the next boss of the SSCVA, the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority here in Lake County, Northwest Indiana. Mayor Land, what are you looking forward to most in terms of being mayor, right? There's got to be some sort of a reason you wanted to do this other than, as you said, looking to transition into something else. Is there any sort of highlights? Is there anything that you're looking at and saying, you know, this is something I've really wanted to do, or this is something I'd really love to be able to implement for the city of Crown Point?
Yeah, I mean, as things develop, you know, I'll put my own stamp on things. One of the things that I don't know if you've had occasion to visit our Bulldog Park facility and all these special events and the musical venues and just all the festivals we have there, the car cruises. It's you know, everything we put on is very well attended there. And one of the things I thought would be kind of interesting and cool is maybe, you know, start introducing some symphony type acts there, or like a regional talent contest or something like that, just a different kind of use to Bulldog Park. But one of the best things that I liked is being police chief. I definitely had administrative duties, which kept me in the office, but was to get out and among in Crown Point. I was always out in the city somewhere talking to citizens, going to speak at different functions, and you really get to know a lot about Crown Point just sometimes on those one-on-one conversations. So I'm looking forward to doing that now on a much larger scale as the mayor. But I mean, you know, like I said, Crown Point's my hometown. I love living here, and I love being out and talking to our citizens and finding out what we're doing right. Is there anything they think we can improve on, and just continue to grow like that.
So when talking about talking with citizens, is there going to be a way for citizens to kind of keep up on what you've got going on in your office moving forward, and any sort of, you know, will there be neighborhood meetings? I know Mayor Uran had a monthly sort of tent pole, if you will, in terms of being able to meet with constituents. Are you going to continue that? Will you do something on social media?
Yeah, so we're going to continue. That was called Tuesday Talks. So, yes, you're right. Every month, different times and different venues and locations around the city, we'd have just a public forum. People can show up. It was always streamed on Facebook Live. So I'm definitely going to continue that. We're looking at just a couple of different ideas as well, just to add to that, perhaps a podcast or something along those lines. But, you know, the mayor is right that, and that was kind of goes along with my, is you got to talk to your, community, you got to talk to your citizens. And if you think something's going right, but they maybe see a different take on it, that's how you learn, is to get their feedback and input. And kind of, you know, other side of that is you're doing something that they really like. Well, sometimes that's good to know that this idea is really popular. Let's look to expand that and certainly continue it. So we will definitely be continuing with the mayor's Tuesday talks, and we'll look to expand, put our own stamp on maybe different avenues.
Crown Point Mayor Pete Lann, as you get set to take over for Dave Uran, again, the outgoing mayor for the city of Crown Point, now taking over the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority. Mayor Pete, you have about a year to decide whether or not you want to run for election in the next election cycle. We wish you the best of luck in getting your feet wet in the city of Crown Point. Again, a city that you've known for quite some time, and we're looking forward to talking with you again in the future.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I look forward to talking to you again.
Joining us now on Regionally Speaking is Indiana Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. Suzanne, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you were just in Northwest Indiana a few days ago meeting with State Representative Mike Andrade from Munster, going over some of the local businesses, specifically Hispanic-owned businesses across Northwest Indiana, including Hammond, Munster, and Maryville. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, what did you see on your trip up here to Northwest Indiana?
Well, first of all, I just want to say how honored I was that Representative Mike Andrade invited me to come up and meet with some Hispanic business owners. He is the only Hispanic General Assembly member, and it's important that we connect with all people. So I so appreciated the opportunity to come up and to visit and learn more. But we started our tour at the Tortilla Nuevo León with Jaime Martinez and his family members, which have had that business, manufacturing business, that makes flour tortilla shell products since 1975. And they have 25 employees, and was able to sample some of the chips and the tortillas. And I just wish that they actually were able to distribute them in Southwest Indiana, where my hometown of Evansville is. And talk to him about maybe making some introductions down there, because they were absolutely wonderful. What I liked about the chips were they weren't too salty. And I find a lot of times when you buy chips in the, you know, in the supermarket, they're extremely salty. These were just perfect. So we started with a visit there, and then we went to the Benevente Eye Care and met with Jorge Benevente. Actually had my eyes checked and kind of looked at a few pair of glasses that I might be calling in a prescription for. So that was certainly a pleasant and fun experience. And then we ended up at Katie Rose Boutique, which Monica Brancic owns. And it was really lovely. And she was sharing with me that she does a lot of business because hers is the only kind of clothing boutique that caters to women in that area. And in fact, she did such a good job that I bought an outfit there. So I love the clothes. And, you know, she's a woman, Hispanic woman, that is making a go at and being able to provide a service that is much needed up there. And then ended the afternoon with a tour at the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana, and really was so impressed by Victor Garcia's commitment to serving those in need and the work that he is doing there, because they serve over 1,600 seniors where they give them 50 pounds of groceries. And oftentimes that is a part of the population that we often don't think really has a need for food, but they obviously are serving that need and really providing such great service. And they serve and assisted over 400 residents in applying for SNAP benefits. So it's almost, they do not only food distribution, but they also provide a lot of social services that their clientele may need. And, you know, looking at how they can collaborate and provide partnerships. Actually, in 2021, they distributed nearly 9 million pounds of food. So they are extremely busy. And I think what really touched my heart, it also was very alarming and concerning to me, is they said that they probably only provide about 60% of the need that is there, or they fulfill about 60% of the need that is there. So they constantly are having to turn people away. So I would encourage everyone, not just in Northwest Indiana, but throughout Indiana, to remember that perhaps some of those that live in our little world and don't always think about those who are in need, really give some thought to that and look at how we can be helpful and help contribute to the food banks and the pantries that are serving those in need here in Indiana. But it was a wonderful trip. I met with entrepreneurs that are making a difference and really contributing to the economy here in Indiana and the quality of life that we have.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch here on Regionally Speaking. She recently joined Representative Mike Andrade from Munster to tour businesses across Northwest Indiana, and specifically Hispanic-owned and operated businesses. According to the 2020 census, Indiana's Hispanic population has increased about 42% in the last 10 years. And since 1990, Latino Hoosiers have seen the largest percentage increase in population among any racial or ethnic group in Indianapolis. And by 2030, Indiana's Hispanic population is projected to grow by 284,000 residents across the Hoosier state. Lieutenant Governor, can you talk with me about what Indiana's doing to bring in more Hispanic-owned businesses, not only to Northwest Indiana, but maybe across the state as well?
Well, what we try to do is make Indiana not just a welcoming state, but a state that has an economic environment that allows businesses to grow and prosper, because quite honestly, when people come here and they locate in our state, and by the way, Indiana, we were the only state to increase our population in the last census. And so that is what we continue to do on a regular basis. And in fact, last week, unrolled and unveiled a campaign that talks about how we can identify Indiana better to those people who live and visit outside of Indiana. And it is the In Indiana campaign. I'm actually on my way up to Michigan City to do an event regarding that. But I think the best thing we can do as leaders of the state is to be sure that we're providing economic opportunity, but that kind of quality of life that is attractive to people that want to come here and settle and live and raise and study and stay.
Lieutenant Governor Crouch, as we kind of make our way through this this current pandemic or post-pandemic, I'm frankly not quite sure where we are with it, other than the cases increase, but deaths are down, hospitalizations seem to be down, which are definitely good things. But how have the local businesses that you've met with and spoke with, how have they managed to get through COVID to keep doors open and, much like the food bank, be able to continue to serve residents of Northwest Indiana?
Well, as I know you probably are aware, we received a lot of federal aid. And with that aid, we were able to provide, through OCRA and other agencies, loans and grants to businesses to keep their doors open. We also worked with groups like people with disabilities and people with mental health challenges to be sure that we were providing grants to them so that they can continue to serve those in need. We also were able to provide grants to those that were festivals, that conduct festivals and fairs and support the arts here in Indiana, because they too suffered, and we wanted to be sure that those things that add to our quality of life were able to survive throughout this very difficult time. So while we have provided the assistance and tried to really do everything we can to keep doors open and to be sure that businesses survive and thrive, unfortunately, not everyone was able to. And to those individuals, we look to provide opportunities for them to be able to continue to participate in the economy and continue to have jobs and move forward. Because while our economy is certainly growing and we have a 2.2% unemployment rate, we also have 150,000 jobs that are unfilled in Indiana. So the demand is there. If people have a need. Certainly businesses are challenged by, a lack of employees and by supply chain challenges, but we're doing everything we can, from supporting meat processing plants to supporting those in the arts and cultural space, so that Indiana can continue to move forward for Hoosiers and continue to attract population so that we can thrive and provide economic prosperity for all Hoosiers.
And Lieutenant Governor, before we let you go, big news out of, Western, we'll call Lafayette.
My alma mater.
We'll call Lafayette, Northwest Indiana, for the sake of this conversation. Soon-to-be former President Mitch Daniels and, of course, former Governor Mitch Daniels is stepping down from his role. Talk with us about what that means for you.
I had the honor of serving under Mitch Daniels when he was Governor of Indiana. Came in 2005 as a state representative and then became auditor of state in 2013. So I served during his term as governor. And what Governor Daniels did and what his motto was aiming higher. And he ended up leading us on a path to turning this state around, because up until he became governor, we really struggled fiscally. And he was able to tighten our belts as governors. He was able to get us through the 2008-09 recession. He reduced employees, cut government spending, cut taxes. And we ended up balancing budgets and ended up, having a healthy surpluses. And as a result, Indiana is number one in the Midwest and sixth in the nation for our business environment. We had the third best infrastructure. And we're one of 13 states with a AAA credit bond rating by all three independent rating agencies. And it all started, that turnaround started under Mitch Daniels. So he was a great governor, and I had the honor to serve under him. And then, of course, he went to Purdue University, my alma mater, boiler up, and, set the bar high, has frozen tuition for all the 10 years he's been there, which has benefited not just those Hoosiers that have attended Purdue University, but I think it has set the standard and benefited students at other universities, because he's led by example. And certainly, while I was, I guess I don't know if upset's the right word. Maybe a little disappointed that he is leaving Purdue. I know he's not. Oh, it's not over for him, and he's going to do some other, embark on some other adventure, and end up benefiting us as Hoosiers because his chapter hasn't ended yet.
All right, Lieutenant Governor, I have to ask. You don't have to do it on the air, but do you know the words to Hail Purdue?
I did at one time.
as a Purdue grad as well, I would have to cheat and look them up too. Right,
I certainly could get started.
That's all that really matters. Then everybody else kind of takes away the rest of the singing there. We're joined by Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch here on Regionally Speaking. Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us here, and thank you as always for taking time out of your busy schedule to go ahead and inform us as to what's happening not only across the state but right here in Northwest Indiana as you are touring the region. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and of course, thank you to the newly appointed mayor of Crown Point, Pete Land, and before that was Andy Downs of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne. Join us tomorrow as we welcome back IUPUI Professor Pierre Atlas to discuss the latest on the January 6th hearings, what it means for Democrats, Republicans, and maybe our own state lawmakers. That conversation coming up tomorrow here on Regionally Speaking. Tune in at 11 o'clock. And if you missed any of today's show, podcasts are available online at lakeshorepublicradio.org.